Welcome to Margin Business Digital Entrepreneur Podcast. Today we have a special guest. It's Yoni Mazur from Getida, a reimbursement company for Amazon sellers, which helps to recover their funds from their missing inventory on Amazon. Welcome, Yoni.
Thank you, Omar. So glad to be here. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining. So yeah, where are you located today? And then we go right into it.
I'm in the New York area. Technically speaking, I'm in New Jersey, but I'm about 10 minutes away from Manhattan. I'm just on the west side of the river. Okay. In our offices, it's the small town called Teaneck, New Jersey. Very cute, very nice. Feels good here.
Sounds good. Yeah. So yeah, let's go right into it. We want to find out where did your entrepreneurial skills come from, or where did they first show up? So maybe your family was entrepreneurial, maybe, we will find out. And I really would like to know, because this is some of the things which I'm really interested in. So every entrepreneur, especially now the digital entrepreneurs, have some story somewhere. And it will come out at some point, you know. So yeah, yeah. Where were you born, and a little bit about your school life, and where were your strong points in school as well?
Got it. So I was born and raised in Israel, in a small town again called Ra'anana, which translated to fresh, like a fresh town, if you'd okay. like. It was created over 100 years ago by American Jews. That came okay. from America, and they said they want to be in the land of Israel, and they kind of created this this town. So over the generations, a lot of Jewish people from America settled in that town. My mother happens to be one of them. So my mother was American.
Okay.
She settled, and I grew up in this town. You were asking about entrepreneurship, and I guess, you know, looking back, I never really thought about it really hard, but now that you asked the question, we raised this topic. I think I have a good understanding of some of the elements in my background that probably assisted my entrepreneurial spirit, or at least my confidence. Okay. For the first thing, is that my father, he's a lawyer. He has his own office. He always worked for himself. So he always had, the need to be independent and, be his own business and have a good relationship with clients and just work very hard. So that was that's one layer, I would say. The second layer will probably be my grandfather. My grandfather from my mother's side was in America as well. He was originally from Europe, from Poland. And in the 40s, there was a big war. He survived the war. Actually, he stayed in Germany after the war for a while.
Okay.
He actually learned the craft of how to make leather jackets very, very well, like German quality, really, really good. Okay. He learned it in Germany after the war. And then he had an uncle in the United States, which invited him to come over. And then once he did, he got to America. He lived in Detroit, where they make all the cars, the manufacturing of cars.
Yeah.
And so he worked full time there. But at nighttime, he used to make in his basement, him and his wife, which is my grandmother, and his sister and her husband. It was a couple, so four people. They used to make leather jackets, you know, the custom orders, but it was very, very good quality.
Okay.
At some point, in some time, they're able to really scale this business up. And at their peak, they were one of the largest manufacturers in the United States of leather jackets. It took, you know, many, many years of hard work. So I always grew up with that, knowing that, you know, their history, how they worked hard, they created their own business. And actually, when they had the factory, it was downtown Detroit. In its peak, they had like seven buildings downtown, you know, hundreds of people working. That's a legend. When I was born in the 80s, you know, things already shifted to Asia. You know, the manufacturing yeah. went to Korea and also to China. So I also, you know, when I used to go visit there, I used to see a big facility, but for the most part, they were doing sales and administration. And I used to see all the assembly line, how the place where you cut the leather, all these pieces of leather, the smell. Another thing is that they had a small store next to the factory. So it's okay. factory outlet store. So as a kid, as a teenager, 13, 14, 15 and up, I used to visit there maybe in the summers or in holidays. And I used to go to the store and just help out. So a customer wants a jacket, I go bring the jacket.
So, yeah,
I need to clean, I clean. So it was part of that store. I got early, work experience, you know, just helping out. So two layers, I would say, which served as strong role models for entrepreneurship, which is my father and my grandfather. But this is on the the role model aspect of things. For myself, you know, when I was young growing up at school, I was an okay student. I wasn't bad. I wasn't the best. I was pretty much okay. But I really liked to do music when I was growing up. So I learned how to play piano. I caught it really, really quickly. And then I used to do recitals and concerts, stuff like that. And that boosted my confidence in, you know, performing and preparing for a performance. And I'm dependent on myself. Nobody can prepare the recital or the piece for me. I have to do it myself, right? That's what things that entrepreneurs always get challenged with. So that was that. And then when I was in ninth grade, I started learning guitar, playing guitar. So I caught that really fast. And then we assembled a band with my best friend, pretty much two of my best friends. You know, we created a band, and then we had to go create shows for ourselves. So we used to go to clubs and ask them, oh, can we come perform here? We're going to bring the audience, you know, and basically it's also kind of entrepreneurship when you have a band. But all of that got cut off when I joined the army. When you get 18, you finish high school in Israel, everybody goes to the army. It's men and women. So that cut off the musical dreams that we have to having a band and, you know, being like a Beatles or something like that. But in the army also, yeah. That, you know, that dream is over. But in the army, they I went to a special Navy intelligent unit, which required a lot of ability to learn and study and perform individually. What I had to do, actually, I can share this with you because I think you speak Arabic a little bit also, right?
Yeah.
So I had to prepare. I had to take a year after high school to learn Arabic. I took the initiative. I said, in the army, I want to be the intelligence, community.
Okay.
And in order for me to do that, I need to have Arabic. So from scratch, I learned Arabic, even though I did have, I do have Arabic backgrounds. My father's from North Africa, from Tunisia.
Okay.
So I remember him, you know, talking to my grandparents, my grandmother in Arabic, but I never really absorbed it. But when I took it upon myself to take a whole year, I really absorbed it in such a degree where I used to kind of start teaching my father, you know, to refresh his memory. And it was very fun. We used to be able to speak in Arabic. So yeah, but it was a whole year, and then a lot of training and a lot of individual skill was required to get into where I was supposed to do. And then once I got in, we had special missions, and we had to lead teams. You know, for every mission, you need a team leader. So that gave me some experience with leading or leadership or something like that. Also, we had a war with Lebanon that also made it very, very unique, very scary times, you know, sometimes. But bundle all this together, I guess it gave me a lot of tools or experience to once I do get to the outside world, when I involved in the business world, I have confidence that I have some history with this. I have, you know, some certain skill sets that I can use to just really work hard, not be afraid of challenge. If anything, when challenge comes in, I'm kind of happy about it. I'm like, oh, this is, you know, I'm so used to getting challenged or challenging myself and putting myself in positions where there's pressure.
Sure.
Because an entrepreneur is, you always, you know, have constant pressure. And growing up, I had these elements in my background. So, but just to be honest and fair, when I really hit the business world, it was, you know, it was really business pressures because you have to make a living. And as you get married, you got kids, children,
sure.
That pressure, all the, you know, stakes are higher. When you're a kid, if you fail, you know what, maybe I'll find an alternative. You still have your own house and you still have your surrounding background. But once you're really on your own and then people rely on you, the pressure is kind of different.
Yeah,
and that only gets real when you hit the real world.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, just to look at it from, again, what you just mentioned. What is interesting is that with the factory, you know, the manufacturing of clothes, this is something which is amazing because, as you mentioned, this is how it begins. You know, you work somewhere and then you create your own business in the basement. You know, you produce here and there for the community a little bit of leather jackets, good leather jackets, which is amazing. I mean, which you need to have the skill for it, you know? And then you as well, you get drawn into it by picking some up and, you know, selling them here and there. And this is already something where you really can see the pattern where you could not go any other direction, you know what I mean? So, and all the skills as well in the army, here in Germany as well, people need to go, everyone in my time now, not anymore now, but before everyone needed to go to the army, right? Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So these are as well leadership skills, as you say. So it's very hard for somebody like that who has seen this, his family going through the struggle to working normally and working on top of it in the basement to create something to make more money, and then actually raise to a high entrepreneur. To go then create, do a job is pretty much not, it's possible for the beginning, but not on the long term. Because as you said, you know, you have costs, you have this and that. With a normal job, it's pretty hard, you know? So it's always an entrepreneur is free, but at the same time has like, is bounded to his company, you know? But at this point where we are, or I assume you as well, is you are bounded the company through family. Everything is mixed up. Everything is kind of together. So this is the beauty of it for me. Because if the whole family don't play with it, it don't really work, you know? If one is doing it, so the kids needs to be involved, everyone needs to be involved. That's the beauty of it. So you can either give the kids that business, or they can learn from you and do their own business. So this is about the entrepreneurship. What I see, and from your pattern, it's exactly what I'm seeing. So, and afterwards, the company of your grandparents, it grew because Detroit is an industrial city. GM is there. It's the city. It's an industrial area, you know. But so from there, it rose up to a manufacturing site. Do I understand this correctly, right?
Yeah, it started in the 50s, and then I think in the 60s, 70s, they peaked. They were really one of the largest in the country.
Wow.
But then the whole manufacturing in the United States in the 80s, I think that was kind of the beginning of the end of manufacturing, yes. Especially for clothing. Yeah. It went to overseas in Asia. So at the end of the day, they just became like a brand, if you like. And then they just, you know, they create the designs and the whole marketing and distribution, and then they manufacture overseas. And that's it's still being run. My grandparents already passed away.
Okay.
Yeah, they passed away. Their show would be, or maybe around their, I think they would be 100 years old if they were alive today. So yeah, they already passed away. But my uncle, my brother took over the business. So like you mentioned, there was a shift of generations. It's already third generation. And to be fair, my brother, he still runs it. They still have it because they have, you know, some a legacy business, but he's also an entrepreneur and a businessman, and he has other businesses that he's invested in and that he created, I guess, from his experience or this vessel of this manufacturing company. He was able to invest in other brands and other tracks. So today is simply a part of a variety of things that my brother is involved with, and he carries it. So, but on the side, you know, I if there's, we consult a lot with each other. We discuss things, we run ideas, or, you know, figure out challenges. So it makes it still a very I have a very unique position in my heart for that company and that brand, just because of the history there.
Sure. It sounds really amazing, because it's really like a book written, you know. It starts like this, and in the 50s, 60s, and then it grows to such an extent, you know, that
I'll give you a little bit of the backstory why it boomed all of a sudden. Maybe Amazon sellers would feel a little bit connection there. So what happened, I think it was in the 50s, there was a very big popular song about this motorcycle rider who's riding a motorcycle, and it has a leather jacket, and in the back there's a white eagle right on the back.
Yeah,
like top number one song or something. It happens to be by real luck that this is a jacket that they made. They actually had that jacket. So, you know, when people realized they have the jacket, it got so many orders coming in, and they just launched. You know, today an Amazon seller wants to launch, he's looking for maybe an influencer or whatever that can be done to create the awareness and then, you know, the demand. So they were extremely lucky, I guess, from fortune to have that extreme demand, because the popular culture, there was a big popular song that created the growth, and there the opportunity for them to get all this demand and then say, oh, okay, all these orders are in, all this money is coming in. They had two options. Either, okay, let's fulfill these orders, make some money, and we're done, and go back to our job at, I believe they worked at the Chrysler, you know, the car company. Everybody was working for the car company back then. Or take a leap of faith, leave our job, and get a small place downtown and start, you know, making it. And that's what they did. And that little place they took up the whole building, and then another building, another building. They lived what we call here the American dream. They definitely lived through that, you know, that scenario.
Yeah, that's really an amazing story, and amazing, inspiring, you know. And afterwards, I mean, you got inspired by all of this, then obviously you knew already that, you know, something will come up eventually, and you knew your direction. Your university, what did you study actually?
I studied business and entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Okay,
so it kind of made sense, yeah.
Okay.
On the educational level, I just had immediate connection to business and also, I guess, the entrepreneurial spirit. So I studied that, but I did work through school. I actually took the liberty of teaching Hebrew.
Okay.
I have passion for teaching and educating, and there's a in the New Jersey, New York area, there's a pretty large Jewish community, and some of them are interested in learning the Hebrew language and to have it with their families. And So I used to have students, so to speak. So usually every day of the week I had like a student. I was teaching Hebrew, but I also started selling online. I was selling on eBay. I was selling, and then I started actually because of university, I started selling on Amazon because I used to get my textbooks to study on, for university, and I bought it on Amazon. And then I had two options to get rid of the book. I can do a trade-in where they give you a little bit of a credit, or if I sell it on Amazon, I can get much more. So that's what I did. I sold my books on Amazon, and so I can get more money back. And that was kind of my first interaction with the platform as a platform, making sales. But later on, once I was able to get my hands on good products and put it on Amazon, it was really like fuel. This I'm talking about around, this is year 2012.
Okay.
When the first, or you know, the early beginnings of touching Amazon.
Yeah.
But 2013, that's when we really started selling, bringing in the supply and the sourcing inventory. And that was our launch. And when I say our, I mean myself and my partner, Max Boren. So we're both partner today in Gatita, but he started back then with selling online. He was, and also had a regular job. I was doing sales and distribution for a supplement company.
On top of it, okay.
Yeah, and he was doing accounting. So just to put in perspective, I'm in school, a full-time job, plus I was teaching just, I guess, for the heart of it, less for the money. I just, keep myself busy, extremely busy. I remember I didn't take any vacations like for 3 good years because that was just, it was intense, boom, boom.
Sure. No, it's very interesting. And I remember that you mentioned that you traveled for 1 year. Is correct.
Yeah, that was after the army. That's correct. Yeah. So in Israel, when we finish the army, there's kind of a tradition for a soldier that get released to travel the world. So the popular destinations are Central or South America, which I chose. I chose South America. And the other part is the East, to go either to India or maybe Nepal or Cambodia, those kind of regions and places. And yeah, I chose South America and I kind of took a year off to travel. It was just a beautiful, part of my life. I picked up the Spanish language.
Okay.
I already had the ability to pick up languages because I had to kind of do it with Arabic for the army. And then when I got to South America, just on the street by just interacting with people, I was able to absorb and build my foundations for the language. So I started in Colombia and I went all the way down to Argentina. So I passed through Peru, Bolivia, I hit Chile, Brazil, and Uruguay. That was kind of the countries I did the Machu Picchu, one of the 7th wonders of the world. I did skydiving. I did this bungee jumping. I did water rafting. It was just great. Just great time to be alive.
Amazing, amazing. But you didn't cross Mexico by any chance?
Not yet. No. Yeah, I mean they're so close to us, and I can't wait to just hit up Mexico. I didn't get a chance to go there yet.
Because of manufacturing, obviously, there was something in the back of my head, because of checking out the China and all these other.
China, places. I've been a few times, but Mexico, so close, but yet so far. I'll go even further than that. I haven't never been to LA, to Los Angeles.
So. Oh, really?
Yeah. So some places are just, I didn't get a chance yet. I've been to around the world, but not the West Coast of the United States, at least in the California end.
Yeah, that's for sure. Mexico would be definitely a destination as well for me, to check out the manufacturing process over there. That's why I'm asking, maybe in the whole journey, you have already seen that there's a possibility of buying some things from South America, importing it to US or importing it into Middle East or importing it somewhere, So that's why That was my my question behind it, actually.
So definitely. I think Central and South America, they have a huge potential.
Yeah.
Really up to them in the next decades to pick it up in terms of creating some sort of a political and economical stability. So it's a reliable area for, you know, brands and business owners to create manufacturing there. I think what China did, which was great for them, was created, you know, a whole infrastructure, which is very reliable. It's like on time demand. You know, you need to reorder, you know, in 30 days, 60 days, 90 days here. There's no revolution. There's no uprising. There's no big case of corruption. And, you know, all the government then resigns and then a new people come in. They don't know you. And then, so in a sense, that's, you need a good, stable geopolitical environment. You know, if it's democratic or communist, that's a different discussion. Right, that's what China has. But in general, I if you look, zoom into what makes economies usually great, is they have the ability to have a reliable environment of doing business. And so that's kind of things they still have to figure out over there. But once they do, and I believe they will, because the whole world is simply becoming more educated, I think, because of the advent of, you know, internet, you know, social media, access to this data and materials. And this, you know, it's just a matter of time till people kind of realize, oh, I have access to so much resources to improve my life and understand how things work. And, you know, be an entrepreneur, right? Do things that, you know, new things that are available to you. I mean, anybody anywhere in the world, if they can hit up social media and they have something interesting to say, something creative to say or to show or design, you know, there's so many tools they can use that are either free or very affordable, so they can, you know, they can, you know, they can grow from it. A lot of new opportunities, but you just have to seize and grab the moment.
Yeah, it's true. So yeah, then you finished this year, obviously. Then we came already into the Amazon sales. As I recall, you were a pretty big seller on Amazon as well. And then you've been with another group, which even boosted yourself even higher. How does this evolve? I mean, you evolve as an Amazon seller, obviously. When you sell your first, let's say, 100,000 per month, you see some pattern, you know, and you know what you need to change, you know how you need to change. How do you get a grip of it? I mean, how did you see, I need to go this way, and if I don't do it, we cannot grow. And obviously, as well, the outside needs to grow with you. There is VAs, there is people who work, or you work 24 hours on your own, but it's almost not possible, you know. So,
right. So the levers of growth that we identified as we were, steaming in this track, Max and I guess what we always kind of had the need for was capital, money,
okay,
and then access to more and more goods, and goods with high demand. And hiring good talent and space. So we started in early days. We started at Starbucks just so we have some free Wi-Fi. You know, we just started this, you know, as scrappy as it can be. And then we're able to get products on consignment where, you know, through good connections, they said, okay, we'll give you for 30 days, 60 days, 90 days, we'll give you some inventory. And then pay us later. So we used to take it, sell it as soon as possible, and then pay back. And then from that profits we made, we didn't just take it home and whatever. We used to use our profits to build the capital of the business, which meant that we still had to stay very, very humble and stay on top of our game. And it's our own money, it's our own skin. There's a lot of dynamics there that we had to figure out. But from Starbucks to a small shop, and then the building next to us, almost like my grandfather, we started a small shop, and then we kind of took over the buildings around us. And then that was too small, so we had to get a nice big facility in a very industrial area and very close to New York as well. And then that wasn't enough, so we had to hire 3PLs. You know, hire more employees. I remember we got a forklift. I got a license on doing a forklift. So I could really? Manage all the pallets. Yeah.
You did it yourself as well, right?
I know. I did it with myself and the team. So a few of us, we got the license. We did the exam. We got our license. It was fun times. It was just times of growth, constant challenges, fueled by demand. You know, we started around 2013, and then 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, just the growth of Amazon, the demand was just monstrous. It's like, it feels like a machine that cannot have enough, you know, like a monster that no matter how much you feed it, just wants more. And it still does. But somewhere along the way, Getita was born from the need to take care of our own, needs as retailers. And that's already a path of a different trail that opened up.
Okay, so yeah, that was actually my next question, because out of all of this, you obviously realized very pretty fast that at the end of the month, hey, there is some 10K missing somewhere, you know? So I know, because you know, we work some with really big sellers, and they had the same problem. So we've before the days, there was other softwares, you know, and then we have obviously now Getida, which is on top of the game in their category. And yeah, they so you found out how, at the end of the month or at the end of the year?
So yeah, I'll touch the genesis of Getida. So what happened was, when we started selling on Amazon, we're selling as FBM, fulfilled by merchant. We didn't use FBA.
Oh, that's very, very courageous, I would say, you know?
No, that was kind of the thing then. I'm talking about 7, 8 years ago, right?
Oh, okay.
So, and then FBA was kind of a new thing. So we said, okay, well, FBA, we can actually have Amazon ship the product. It was all very new. So we said, but who is this Amazon? Because back then eBay was like kind of the monster, right? And
Yes.
Amazon was up and coming. So who is this Amazon? What happened was, I remember the first shipment we ever did to FBA was about $10,000 worth, which was a lot of money for us back then. And we're like, okay, if we ship it there, you know, what's their policy? Right? So we called it in. I said, you know, we want to sell this and send these products in. What's your policy if something gets lost, damaged, destroyed, disappear? It's like, oh, we have a whole what we call FBA reimbursement policy. And they showed us where it is in, you know, on Sell Essential. So we go in, we re review all the information. I said, okay, so the good news is they have a policy. Now let's ship it in, let's see what happens. We shipped it in, and lo and behold, they lost a few units. Okay, we discovered that they lost a few units, and we opened up a case, and they said, oh, they investigate, they can't find it. Boom, they provide a reimbursement, they pay money. We're like, okay, these guys are serious. You know, they're serious, they have a policy, and they activate, they don't play around, which signaled to us is that we can play very, very big with this channel.
Yeah.
We can invest, you know, the next shipment will be 20,000, the next one will be 40,000, 80,000. And then we got to degrees that every shipment was like 100+ thousand. Boom, boom, boom. We had the full confidence in the system. All right. This very, very important element that many take for granted. But Amazon was able to build this kind of trust with millions of entrepreneurs, millions of Amazon business owners. It's something to take, you know, you cannot take this lightly. So in any case, we saw that there's a good policy in place that's reliable, that's fair. So that was from the first shipment. So, but what happened was, obviously, that was easy to discover on the shipment level. But what happened was, we were still very data focused. So we said, okay, the products are in the warehouse, you know, in the FBA centers. You know, we keep track of it, right? And if there's somebody orders it, okay, we see that there's the customer order. What happened? And if there's a refund, what happened? We always from the early beginning checked every transaction, and we always used to find discrepancies. You know, it's all of a sudden was there in the warehouse, all of a sudden it's not there. It was lost. All of a sudden it was there, and then all of a sudden it changed the status, is damaged. We always saw this issue. So, you know, at the beginning it was okay because you had spreadsheets and where the volume wasn't too crazy. But once the volume hits some such a threshold where it's too much for us, we can't just download spreadsheets. And so we had to kind of do two things. The first thing we had to create was technology to download all the data and really to do auditing and build algorithms that you could do auditing every day, you know, with a lot of data. That's the first component, right? That's the software. But the second component, which is equally as important, is to have a dedicated team
Yes.
that will open and manage all the claims. Because when you open cases with Amazon, some things can get resolved in a few hours, very quickly, some of them a few days, but then sometimes it can be a few weeks, a few months, and even rare cases over a year. So you
Yes.
need a good team that knows the lingo, knows the elements, knows how to handle the back and forth until you bring all the resolution, the full resolution. And usually the full resolution involves a reimbursement, a payment. So these two components that we built for our own needs to play on a high level has been created. Just to keep in the back of mind that, you know, we jumped ourselves, Max and I, from 0 to 20 million very, very quickly in sales. And then, like you mentioned, we became a part of a larger group that, as a group, we did about 100 million. So there's a real demand to create the best that something can be for our own needs. But as we created and built our own solution, we kind of shared and told some people from the industry, you know, some of our friends were also selling on Amazon, and they came to us and said, help us, we'll pay you.
Okay.
And that was the birth of Getida. Now we call it Getida. Back then, we didn't have a name, but okay, you know, we can help them make some money. And then they were happy, extremely happy. And then they told a few of their friends, they were extremely happy. And again and again and again. So for like two and a half years, I would say, it was just growing and growing organically, just from the wow effect that all this money was available to me all this time, and I was just leaving it behind. So just let's talk about reimbursement for 1 second, just to give a context. So when things go wrong, Amazon puts an expiration date on it. There's usually, for most things, there's about 18 months where you can look back and get, you know, money back. But after 18 months, they expire, you lost everything. And when I lost everything, you lose twice. The first thing you lose is your inventory, the investment, the money you put into the inventory. But the second thing you lose is your profit. Because when Amazon pays a reimbursement, they're really, really nice. They pay you as if the item sold on Amazon.
Yeah.
And that usually includes a profit. Yeah. So that's why, you know, it's very important that you get all everything that you're eligible to get on time and never let it expire. And these sellers, you know, these clients, these early clients, they realize they were doing, they're fairly large clients, you know, fairly large sellers, because we're, you know, our friends from the industry were kind of playing on the same levels as our level. And they were just shocked, you know, because the statistically speaking, we find that the discrepancy rate on a yearly level can range between 1 to 3%.
Yeah.
So if you do a million on Amazon on FBA on in a year, your discrepancy rate can be $10,000 to $30,000. Yeah. That's money, right? If you do 10 million, 100 to 300,000. If you do 100 million, it's 1 to 3 million. It's just money. It's just money that simply goes to waste. So our mission right now for our thousands and thousands of clients is just to everything that they're eligible to get, they're gonna get it. They're always gonna get it on time. We're never gonna let it go to waste. So we were able to obviously focus hard on the mission, the value early on, because actually that value hit us in the head, because the people came to us and told us, help us. Like, look, why is this thing happen? Why is it so important to them? Obviously, it was important to us, but that's us. But so many others recognized the demand and pushed us towards, you know, helping with them, and then helping their friends and helping their friends. And then we really established our identity and our focus and our mission. And now what happened over the years, we're faced with two decisions. I guess maybe similar to my grandparents back in the day, they were working for Chrysler and then maybe jump and do their own business. But we had the two businesses. We got the retail and what we call the Getida is technology and services, because we're not just a software, actually as a service solution. So we have these two businesses. They're both doing okay. Retail, we kind of reached a certain height and levels that we're, we kind of peaked, right? And we said we can always go back to it. If worst comes to worst, we can always go back to it, and nobody can take it away what we know. It's like our diploma, if you like. But this technology and services, we're helping so many others, and we wondered how far we can take this, how much we can help. So we cashed out of our retail position, and we focused all of our attention and energy and mindset and skill and talent into Getida. And once we did that, we made that decision, it really paid off, because it was like a rocket launch, and it was like a volcano where we essentially took leadership in this industry, where today we're probably the largest organization in the world dedicated to Amazon FBA auditing and reimbursement. You know, we have a global team of 40 plus clients. We audit billions of dollars worth of transactions every day across our network. A lot of hard work, a lot of people need a lot of help, and we're just constantly focused on that. And just for the soul, it's a pleasure just to be able to help so many.
Sure, because from what I understand, when you, for example, when you get the new client back then, and when you go back and actually retrieve the 18 months for let's say $200 million seller, and you suddenly put him on the table $30,000-$40,000 US dollars, you know, it's like
we're married.
Where is that coming from?
It's a wedding. It's a wedding. It's a wedding gift. Yeah, it's a wedding gift. We come okay. And what's interesting is that we don't charge any subscription or nothing up front. We're performance-based. You know, we only charge a fee from the recovery. It's 25%. So if we got you $100 back, 25% will be $25. So it's what we call PPR, paper recovery only. So I only get paid if you get paid. So they say, try us out. There's nothing to lose. It's free to join. Anybody can join at any time. So, you know, we got a $200 million seller that joins. They're skeptic. I know everything. I do $200 million a year. I know everything. We have this kind of sometimes of a mindset. What can they teach me? What can they show? So we said, it doesn't matter. Well, mathematics will show you what we know, because what's going to happen. So like you said, all this hundreds of thousands of dollars come back out of nowhere, and they're just, wow, they're shocked. They're shocked, and they're very happy, and it creates a very good, you know, partnership for life, because beyond the money, beyond the reimbursement, we discovered that, you know, our revenue is attached to the seller's revenue, because we are able to recover 1 to 3%. So if this year you do 1 million, but then next year you do 2 million, we grow with that, right? So what happened was we realized that we need to help sellers educate themselves and become better sellers, do whatever we can to make them better sellers. So because of that, we took a strategic decision to invest hard into education, you know, seller conferences, online, you know, webinars, whatever it is. You know, before Corona, we actually had, you know, physical events where sellers can come in and meet and, you know, bring speakers and let them, you know, grow from that, and open their horizons and, you know, give them whatever we can. So that we realize that as they really learn and they implement and they just grow, we grow. And it's a beautiful synergy of a partnership between us and our users, where it creates a culture, it creates a supportive environment. And yeah, that's one of the things we discovered along the way, which makes it also very, very, I guess, fun to be a part of.
You know, that's exactly why I like the way Getida does as well business, or as well that this area of business is a very trustworthy environment. Because when you come back with for $20 million sellers and you put him back this money, it's obviously you say, wow, okay, these guys are serious, you know? So this opens the door for a lot of things. So this is, like I said, a very trustworthy environment, very, very, you know, and then obviously you stay together. You won't go anywhere else. And, you know, although there is other softwares out there, for me personally as well, Getida is one of the biggest and the ones, because you came from the seller perspective, you created this, and out of Getida, there will come other things out, you know, in the future. I'm sure it's already in the planning. And there is goes as well my next question. For example, because, you know, we got Jumia for Africa. We got Real.de for Germany. We got Cdiscount for France. They all have, I mean, for Jumia, for now, they are not centralized. It's a little bit for every country is keeping their own warehouses, you know. But for example, for Real.de, for Cdiscount, they are pretty big players as well in Europe. Do you see in the future any cooperation with them, or do you have any other marketplaces where you actually present at the moment?
Got it. So that's a very good and tough question. So yeah, we're just as a side note, we are a global provider for Amazon sellers. So if you sell in Europe, we cover Europe. If you sell in North America, we cover that as well. Wherever you sell on Amazon, we have coverage. That was hard to begin with to establish, right? Because you have different languages and you have some different data points. So, but we're able to explore that. The answer is that yes, looking into the future, we think so. But we need to identify a clear winner who is really has volume. It's all a business of volume. So if they're going to do 1-3% of mistakes, it better be, you know, the entire volume of the marketplace should be hopefully in a few billion. So we're going to apply resources and developing two things, the technology, but also the team, the dedicated team, because every marketplace has its own language, its own set of logic. So that's it's heavy lifting. You know, we're already 5 years into the making and we're still learning every day and developing every day in the Amazon sphere. So regarding Europe, if there's going to be a clear winner, we're probably going to make a strategic decision to you know, apply resources. At least in the United States, that we already have our eyes on Walmart. They started fulfilled by Walmart, and that's kind of up and coming. And I would say probably within, you know, 2021, maybe 2022, not just us, the whole world will see if there's really some meat and bones growing up in this body. Then we're probably going to have to make those, you know, strategic decision, apply resources, and you know, take a leap of faith.
Okay, yeah, that's it's. I mean, it's interesting. There's enough to do for the morning for the moment to cover for Amazon worldwide. As going into marketplaces, for example, as I said, in Europe, it's yeah.
And then you have your Sweden open up, and this opens up, so it's we're still playing catch with the Amazon marketplace. It's just so quick and so fast, which is great. So it's a very fertile environment to be in. But internally, we also look for Amazon sellers. What else can we offer them, or support them, solutions that we can create to help sustain and help their growth? So we're already invested. There's, you know, elements of R&D. I cannot disclose too much, but I think already we have at least one of them we want to launch in 2022. We already know that we're going to have to invest between a year to 2 years in just creating the product, the technology, testing it in a good, what would you call a sandbox environment, with you know, some beta users. And once we have proof of concept, you know, stress test on the system, you know, tweaked with bugs, that's when we aspire to launch it. But it's not, you know, it's just hopefully there's things to look into the future.
Yeah, that sounds really good. Then, you know, and like I said, everything like Getida, the growth, where it's coming from, it will definitely, you know, grow into something else or grow even bigger from what it is, or it gets in, you know, it's definitely something where I'm looking forward to it and watch the show, you know, so.
Thank you. Yeah, I want to stress something very, very important. At least that for us is very important. The focus for us, at least now, it took many years to come to this, at least for myself and the team. The focus is really about to make it simple. How can we help? What can we do to help? Not what we can do to make money. Exactly. What can we do to make you pay us or something? What can we do to help you? Because if somebody is getting helped and they can clearly recognize it, everything else falls into place. So if you're an Amazon seller listening to the show, obviously you're not, you don't need to sell a solution for other Amazon sellers unless you ever wanted to explore that. That's fine. But what you need to think about is for your clients, for your customer, your consumer, your user. Because when they're buying your products, you're helping them with something. There's a utility to be made. If they're buying a toy, if you're selling toys, you know, you're helping them with their need to play. If you're selling an item for the kitchen, you're selling them an item that helps them cook or prepare or whatever it is. Always have that simple focus on where we create the products and how can I help them in the best way possible and more of it over the future. If you have that focus really honed in, that's going to be the foundation, a good foundation for you to build on. Just as a side note.
Yeah, I agree with that. So one last question I have. Concerning business in general in the digital space, obviously, as well outside, you know, there's a lot of challenges at the moment. Many people lost their, you know, restaurant business. Plenty, you know, the entrepreneurial world, the business world is upside down a little bit. You know, it's I think it's a bit us. We are very blessed, you know, that everything is running, everything is good, you know. And what would be your message to young entrepreneurs, I mean, who want to start a business? And or others as well who are in a business which is now collapsing, or you know, what would be your message to help them, or to help them? Where's the next step? What could they do, or how could they go against this kind of environment, stressful environment where we're in at the moment?
Yeah, it's a very, very tough question, because on the high level, economies and businesses, they're cyclical, they're cycles. You know, even the internet had its crash in early 2000. It was booming in 95, 96, 97, like really quickly, 2000, 2001, 2002. 90% of all the companies just went away. It was just a disaster because there was no infrastructure for anybody to use all these solutions. It took about another 10 years to start recovering. And now we're living into 20 years after the big crash where the world is finally ready. Why? There's smartphones everywhere. There's devices. So this distribution is very, very key. So, you know, the cycle now is very hard on travel and entertainment and leisure. It's very hard. Once again, but I do believe it's a cycle. So if that's your passion, that is where you are, and you don't want to look any other way, I don't know, try to hold on, or maybe get some sort of a financial relief if you have the ability to do so, or keep it afloat, keep your fingers in the game, but have a side hustle, and you know, you can do Uber ride. Actually, Uber is not a good time this now, but Airbnb is still around. You know, I know Airbnb did an IPO launch, so it shows you that, you know, old world with the new world, right? Old world of hospitality with the new world of anybody can be a host and make some money. So there's an option there. I know for myself, back in the days, I knew Hebrew pretty well. I used this instrument to make income and teach. So if you know how to play some music, go online, offer your services. It's free to offer the services. Somebody will try you. And if it's going to be good, you're going to get a recommendation. You're going to get reviews. And that's good. Start something. Put yourself in maybe at a track for something that, you know, might help you just to survive. But if you find that, wow, you're really doing really great, you have a lot of passion with it, and it just really, the demand hits you and tells you we need more of you, you'll find a good place to be. So it could be teaching. It could be go to Fiverr. You know, on Fiverr, you can have so many solutions if you're good with video design, sound design, creating products, inventing, whatever it is. There's so much available to connect with you and others. Put yourself there. You know, if you're probably listening to this, you are connected to the digital world, right? Because I'm sure this episode is not going to reach out in the newspaper, because you can't even hear anything in the newspaper to somebody in Berlin, for example, right? So if you're listening to this, you're already kind of connected to the digital space. Open your horizons, you know, raise the awareness. I want to raise the awareness to you that there's so many things out there. So Fiverr is definitely an option. There's FreeUp. There's, at least in the United States, it's called Wyzant. I think it's Y, W-Y, Zant, A-N-T. Why is that? It's like a marketplace for teachers. You know, if anything you want to teach, that's what I use. I'm sharing from my own experience in the United States. Maybe it's already available in Europe. If not, look in your marketplace where you can offer your teaching services. Once again, try to do that to get by. If you really want to stay in the industry that you're in right now, that's suffering, just so you can get ahead, or maybe lay the tracks for a new future for you. And if you are and you're successful, all the blessings.
To wrap this up, actually, the entrepreneurial side, what you just mentioned, is a real amazing advice for everyone out there who wants to do something and wants to go and get into the game or stay in the game, is just start. You know, this is what I would say. To just put it in one word, what you just mentioned is just start. You know, there's everything out there. We have the resources nowadays. We have the internet. We can do so many things. We just have to start instead of doing something else, which gives us nothing. You know, just sit down. The computer is there, or even internet cafe and other places. You know, there is plenty of resources.
Like I said, we went to Starbucks to get free Wi-Fi because we didn't have an office. And then, you know, try to go online, try to find products so we can sell online. And it worked. You know, we were scrappy. We had zero, literally zero. I came to this country with $700 in my pocket. So start. Lay the tracks, you know, just keep persistence, perseverance, consistency is key, but start with something. Then you can start maybe something else, but at least start, and you don't have to pay on $100,000 to some major course, life-changing course, all these. It's there. If you have the money to do it, by all means, but there's such basic things that you can do that all of a sudden will pull you in. Just like you said, start is a key word.
Yeah. For me, it was the same for Starbucks. You know, I love Starbucks. In Europe, it's not the same as, for example, in Asia. In Asia, the Starbucks are a lot nicer. I've never been to the US, but I can tell you, in Asia, you don't want to get out of the Starbucks.
God willing, the first time you come to the US, first Starbucks is on me. How does that sound?
Sure, that sounds good. That sounds really good.
You come to New York, try to come to New York. If you come to LA, it's going to be tough. Maybe we can meet in LA because I've never been there also. So okay. We'll both have our first Starbucks in LA together.
No problem. I will definitely 2022 is a goal for me to visit New York, actually.
Marhaba, welcome, yeah.
Thank you. Okay, so yeah, thank you so much for your time, Yoni. Let's do this again at some later point when Getida gets out there, a few more arms, you know. It's amazing, the story, and as well from your grandparents, there is always something we can relate to, you know. Really, thank you.
Thank you so much. All the best, everybody. Take care.
Great. Thanks. See you later. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.